I'm Gab, he's Jules. Overcast skies in West London. What else is new? Probably overcast skies in Manchester too, because usually like that. But beneath those, the sun is shining.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo is on his way.
Yes.
We'll be getting into that, but we've got so much other stuff going on. Of course, Liverpool and Chelsea drawing. Arsenal sticking it up against City. Juventus, the first match of the post-Cristiano era. Not a good one.
Not good.
But let's get right into this, because people are going to look at... We did a show on Thursday.
Yeah.
And Cristiano was linked to Manchester City.
Heavily.
I thought, actually, I stuck to this. I said, in the unlikely event that Kylian Mbappe leaves, I personally thought it's all a ruse.
Yeah, you love
that. For
him to
go to Paris Saint-Germain. In the end, this is pretty extraordinary what happened on Friday, where all of a sudden you have Pep Guardiola coming out and saying, well, it's up to Cristiano if he wants to come. It's not up to me.
Yeah.
That to me says, we made him an offer. That's the deal. Take it or leave it, right?
Yeah.
I am minutes later and a few miles away.
Yeah.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says, well, I didn't know he could be leaving. And you see if his nose gets a little longer when he says that. But of course, we're here. And obviously, minutes later, the announcement.
Yes. Pretty incredible day, even in the world of transfers, in the world of reporting things, what you can hear, what you can write, what people tell you. But whether they use City as, well, you could, when you go fishing, you know, and the thing for the fish, a fish bait.
It's a bait, yes.
Bait. Whether they use City for that, whether United woke up late and said, we can't let that happen. We can't let one of our legends go into the arch enemies and rivals. And the whole United, all players, current players, all teammates or whatever, machine, PR machine, saying like, Cristiano, you can't do this, come to us. And the Glazer, in fairness, great opportunity for them to try to get a bit more popularity towards the fan by saying, hey, look, we brought back Cristiano to home.
We're going to get in all that. We're going to dissect that. But Cristiano wasn't there on Sunday when they played Wolverhampton Wanderers. See how he did that?
Yeah.
They won 1-0. But if Cristiano was watching, how do you think he would have felt?
Oh, that was not good at all. That was not... With the ball, there was nothing, pretty nothing, apart from maybe one or two moments just like that. It's a goal that should not have been allowed anyway. So
you think so?
I think it was a foul, 1,000%.
You're just anti-Paul Pogba and anti-French.
And you know how much I love, Paul Pogba. And I just think there's a contact, even if it's a small, it doesn't touch the ball.
De Gea had to make at least two tremendous saves.
Yeah.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka saving on the goal line.
But is it a worrying performance for you?
I mean...
Collectively.
I look at performances, and some people come out as well, but they won, and De Gea did what he's paid to do. I'm like, no, it's De Gea wouldn't have even been playing if Henderson's fit, first of all. But secondly, it is a worrying performance, and you wonder how these pieces are going to fit together. Now, we're going to go into this in detail further, but you know, I ran some numbers. Last season, Cristiano played like 90% of his minutes for Juve in a front two.
Yeah.
Right? And there's reasons for this. He can't, if you put him on the wing, he can't track back the way he used to, which is normal. He's 36, he's super fit, but he's not going to do that, and he doesn't press, and the numbers clearly show that. Equally, if you put him at center forward on his own, he's going to have an issue because people are going to kick lumps out of him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a big boy, but still, it's not nice to be kicked all day, as Messi found out.
Yeah.
And equally, there's no threat to run him behind because he's not slow, but he has some real speedsters out there these days, right?
Yeah.
So you're not going to stretch defenses that way. So the question is, I think he performs best in a front two. And the problem with the front two at United is, how do these pieces fit? You've just signed a really expensive winger in Jadon Sancho.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Rashford, who often operates on the wing.
And Bruno Fernandes. Can you play Bruno Fernandes in a 10 behind two forwards?
You'd have to play a 4-diamond two. But then the problem is, that means having an extra midfielder. And that is one position where United are light, and I'm not having a go at Fred, but the reality is two out of Fred, Matic, and McTominay would have to play with Pogba in the three. That's not a great situation to be in.
It's not at all. And again, I'm not convinced that Bruno can play well in that number 10 with two strikers and no space in front of him, because he's also good when he makes those runs from his central position. If you've got two strikers, there's no room for Bruno.
Not to mention that position, which is the one that suits Cristiano best, also leaves just one spot. Assuming Bruno starts and Cristiano starts, that just leaves one spot to be shared by Sancho, Greenwood, Rashford, Martial, Cavani.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, so there's a ton to get into. Yeah. We're going to get into it on the Gab and Jules podcast. All right, Jules, let's start with what I think is the burning question here, mm-hmm. and something I've written about. Last season, when it was obvious things are going to go south for Juve, it was pretty clear that Pirlo was going to leave as early as March or April, you know, no matter what happened. And it was pretty clear that Juventus were going to take an enormous financial hit, which eventually they would do, 300 million euros in losses over two seasons, partly because of COVID, partly, let's face it, because of bad choices, mm-hmm. that there was going to be another rebuild, and that Juventus were going to be open to offers, and they had a price, 25 million euros, which is the residual amount of his amortization. I think I wrote this as well, and we talked about it, like, oh, well, it might make sense for United. Obviously, Cristiano's makes a ton of money, but you can put in the Cavani slot. Yeah. Cavani also makes a lot of money. I think roughly a third of what Cristiano was making at Juve. And then, you know, you can certainly ride the enthusiasm. You're good at commercializing it. You've got your goal scorer doesn't necessarily have to play every game unless he wants to, whatever, right? You have your glamour signing, right? I'm not saying Cristiano and Cavani are interchangeable. They're different sorts of players, but they can do some of the same things, and you get a lot of goals. And then it didn't happen. But what was weird to me was Solskjaer feigning surprise, right? He says, oh, is he available, right?
And the club, overall.
And then the club briefing, because all these stories you see out now, right? Sir Alex Ferguson getting on the phone and stuff. It's as if all of a sudden, Cristiano decided he wanted to leave.
Yeah.
I don't buy that for one second. Nothing changed at Juventus between May and August. Juventus' stance didn't change.
Yeah.
Cristiano's, the only thing that changed was that tweet from Cristiano, but I think Cristiano could look around, he'd see his teammates, he knew what was going to happen, he knew they were getting Locatelli, nobody else. That's what doesn't add up to me.
Exactly. Because if United really wanted Cristiano, as in
he is part of a plan.
Yeah, part of a plan before the transfer window back in January when you start working, when you start really planning for it and you say, okay, this is the positions we need, centre back. What about Varane, Upamecano, whatever the order is, a right winger or a winger, Jadon Sancho, blah, 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 blah. And then if they really needed a centre forward, on top of giving a new deal to Cavani, Greenwood, Martial still being there, Rashford, whatever, and they had identified Cristiano as the one they needed, or certainly in that shortlist, they would have said, okay, let's sign him, and they would have done it back in June.
Okay, now I'm
not on the 31st or 1st of September.
Well, that leads me to my next point. I'm not saying Cavani wasn't necessarily a roadblock for Cristiano, but because obviously they signed Cristiano with Cavani still there. But the reality is, given that, three international breaks and everything, the guy legitimately wants to play in the World Cup for Uruguay, fine.
Yeah.
It just would have made more sense that way. The fact that it didn't happen that way, it kind of makes me think, was Cristiano looking, were there other options that Cristiano might have considered before United? In other words, was your return to United not Cristiano's first option? And I don't say this in any disrespectful way.
Yeah, no, of course.
We know, obviously, there was the Chiringuito, Edu Aguirre, Real Madrid thing.
Yeah.
I held out hope like a child for the Paris Saint-Germain thing.
And he was offered to them. I think he was offered to a lot of clubs, and probably United as well at some point. That's why you also wonder if the reaction to go and sign him was on the back of him being linked to City or being quite close to City or being in talks with City, and United said, we can't let that happen. Let's move in now.
That's the thing. The point at which Cristiano says he wants to leave, you presume Mendes picks up the phone and starts doing the rounds,
right?
So Real Madrid closed the door pretty early on, although maybe it could have reopened. Who knows?
Maybe.
What struck me was the morning that he goes and he's in Turin and he tells the club officially that he wants to leave, he then flies to Paris afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he wasn't in Paris to get, Eiffel Tower snow globes. He was there to speak to somebody.
True, but Nasser Al-Khelaifi wasn't there, for example.
Maybe he was speaking to Leo. Leo was there.
He could have spoken to Leo about other things too. I don't know.
In the middle of the Cristiano Ronaldo deal, you go and you talk to him about other things. What? But he's going to go talk to him about Fabio Silva. Come on, man.
Danilo Pereira? No.
Okay, all right. But whatever. he's doing his job.
Yeah, of course.
Knocking on doors. But what doesn't add up to me is he obviously offered him to City, right? We know this. But when you offer him to City, wouldn't you offer him to United at the same time? So if we think he offered him to City after the Kane deal fell apart, right?
Yeah.
You get on the phone to City. Wouldn't you think you would also get on the phone to United at the same time? I think we both know the answer to that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet... And
probably even before that.
You would think so. And yet, that's not when the wheels set in motion from United. And the narrative that's been laid out, and you're going to read a lot of stories on this, because United pay people, their employees, to go and give background stuff to people. That's how they operate media-wise, like most clubs.
Yeah.
The narrative is Thursday night, Sir Alex Ferguson and Rio somebody
Ferdinand
rings
the
Rio Ferdinand, and then they call up Solskjaer calls up Ed Woodward.
Yeah.
Woodward says, "Okay, let's do this." You know, the Manchester Evening News reporting that the Glazers pick up the paper and see, "Oh yes, let's bring back Cristiano."
It's like Tom Brady. This is
this stupid Tom Brady analogy makes zero sense. Whatever. That's what I find absolutely extraordinary, and I hope somebody out there who covers United closely can answer that question.
Yeah.
Especially when you knew that City were making a lowball bid. And look, all we have to go by is what's coming from Juventus.
Yeah.
But what Juve have indicated, people close to Juve, and they're getting this on the club, is that City's bid, well, first of all, the formal bid never arrived.
Yeah.
But the verbal bid, with Mendes acting as intermediary, it was always lowball. First, it was like, we'll take him on a free, and then we'll give him the same salary he has now, but spread over 2 years. Then they bumped it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Then it was 10, 15 million euros, which, you know, Juventus said they would turn down. I mean, I think they might have taken it in the end.
Yeah, maybe. But maybe it was the ownership, even in a response to the Qataris getting Messi in Paris and Abu Dhabi wanting Cristiano in a city, and Pep was not too convinced. Chiqui maybe wasn't too convinced either, although Mendes says that Pep spoke to Cristiano and it went all well and all of that. But from the beginning, we also said that Cristiano is not Pep compatible.
Yeah.
For all the reasons that you said earlier, a front two, no thank you for Pep. Press and counter-press, no for Cristiano. So already on paper, it looked like, really? Cristiano and Pep in that kind of football in the Premier League?
The thing that also doesn't quite add up to me, what you just said there about, oh, maybe it's a Messi, Ronaldo, Emirati versus Qatari thing. It would be very unlike City's owners, right? The Emir Sheikh Mansour, we know, has been to one football match at the Etihad in his life. That was more than 10 years ago, I think. Khaldun, for all the talk, people seem to forget, Khaldun's main job isn't being chairman of Manchester City.
No.
His main job is he runs the Mubadala Corporation, which is about 50 times as big as Manchester City. That's what he does for a living.
Yeah.
So this idea that Khaldun would be like, oh, look, wouldn't this be brilliant? And ha, ha, finger in the eye to the Qataris, let me say. That doesn't add up to me. And historically, they haven't. City's ownership, they haven't really interfered in the work of the club.
No, but you could see why suddenly there would be like, you know, we know the rivalry between Qatar and Abu Dhabi, between Doha and Abu Dhabi, and we've seen that on the pitch as well, but maybe there was something, but maybe there wasn't. But still, it remains that...
Is it more plausible, perhaps, that Mendes got on the phone to Khaldun, or maybe even somebody higher up than Khaldun, and said, hey... Talk to Pep, see what we can do.
Yeah, certainly.
He wants to win another Champions League.
I'm sure. And also, who could have got him? PSG, and they said no from the beginning. Real Madrid, and clearly this was not really the idea, certainly early on.
Yeah, I think there's another striker they like more.
Exactly. And then City and United. So if the first two, PSG and Real Madrid, are out of the picture, then you're left with the two Manchester clubs. No one else could have... Got him. No one else. Then he would have had to stay at Juventus, which he really didn't want, and Allegri didn't want it either. So then you're down to City or United. If City are a bit like, yes, maybe, let's see, what about this? And then United go, okay, let's make this deal. The problem is, now that you have him, now he's yours, this is all great, and in terms of revenues, in terms of the image of the club worldwide, it's fantastic, and he's great for the Premier League. Even at 36, he's a legend, all of that. Okay, now show me how he's going to play, and tell me he's going to do well in this formation and with these players around him.
We're going to get to that in a minute. But first, I wanted to knock another aspect to the narrative of how he ended up United on the head, or at least question it a little bit. One of the things that people seized on, especially people who maybe, I don't want to say don't follow football closely, but this idea that, oh, Cristiano's going to their big United's biggest rival and so on, right? If you're a little bit older, like I am, or if you know a lot of United fans, I'm talking about like serious United fans who actually go to the games, and I'm not talking Mark Ogden because he's an extreme case.
Yeah.
They don't view City as their longtime rivals. They view them as the annoying, upstart, noisy neighbors because for most of their lifetimes and growing up, City haven't been good.
Yeah.
And while obviously they really appreciate what Cristiano did and everything, they also know that Cristiano left 12 years earlier.
Yeah.
So this narrative that, well, we can't afford to let him go to our biggest rivals. I think most United fans, when they say, what club do you hate the most? They may hate the new Man City.
But it still would have hurt.
I think it would probably be Liverpool.
Yeah,
no?
True, but it still would have hurt, I think. To see Cristiano with the blue shirt and the number 7 or whatever number, I think it would have hurt. Imagine the first derby if he scored. You know, Carlos Tevez was... He's not Cristiano,
right.
But already then that was a bit, and he went straight from one to the other, which is different. There was no 12 years apart, but still, I think there will be something there. Maybe not as much as we made out of it, but I still think it would have hurt a few United fans.
You think they were all disappointed when Dennis Law played for Manchester City?
I mean, they went down, didn't they?
Apparently, it's a myth. Part of the narrative is it's the goal that sent United down. It's not. It wasn't actually apparently.
Yeah, no, I don't know. And maybe you're right. Maybe those things... I mean, Rafa Benitez is now the Everton manager, so we could have had the same summer, Cristiano and Rafa.
Yeah, I can't believe you just mentioned Rafa and Cristiano in the same sentence.
No, but you know what I mean. You know.
Let's not go there. You talked about something important, which is the actual fit on the pitch, and I will be absolutely fascinated to see how Solskjaer makes this work. When you talk about integrating a player in a team, there's two aspects to it. There's the man management side, and I think our colleague, I think Craig Burley, said something that was very, very apt about this. Craig's often been critical of Solskjaer over decisions and whatever, but one aspect that he thought Solskjaer was really, really, really solid on, and I think so too, is man management.
Yeah.
I think he's really good. My understanding is most of the players really like him as a person,
completely.
And he's good and he motivates them or whatever. So I think that part isn't so much of an issue. But tactically, he's got to play somewhere in the team. So where does he play? I suggested before a front two is the most rational decision. I don't know if it's workable at United.
I have big doubts on the front two, I have to be honest. Even if you convinced me, and I mean, I knew it, I didn't need your convincing, but that is probably his best position. I agree with you. He needs someone next to him. I really don't think they can play like that. I don't think they can play with a front two, have a diamond midfield with Bruno as the number 10. I think you lose so much out of Bruno in that formation. And you cannot forget, even if he's Cristiano's friend and he's welcoming him, you can't forget how important Bruno is for this team and how efficient and how he's carried that team in the last 18 months. That suddenly you can't just go, you know what, we're going to play you in a position that doesn't suit you, where you might not be as good just for Cristiano. I'm not sure this is going to work. What happened to Jadon Sancho? Even if you play with a front two, there's no width, certainly on that right-hand side with Wan-Bissaka. So, you know, what do you do? I just think it's a bit of a headache now going forward. In that game against Wolves, if you put Cristiano there, let's say, instead of Greenwood and Greenwood wide, for example, instead of Dan James, what is Cristiano doing in that game? Nothing. There's no service. There's no crosses. There's no movement. There's absolutely nothing apart from the flick from Bruno for Greenwood just before halftime, and then I guess the goal, and that's it.
So the other issue then, so then it looks like we're heading towards, and what you're saying, a 4-2-3-1 setup, which is like the one we saw, and you
I
made
think
that
so.
Analogy. So that has first of all, that has a knock-on effect on Pogba, because a lot of people are convinced that Pogba in a two doesn't work. Personally, I disagree a little bit with it.
Yesterday, he left them a bit exposed again defensively. You know, he doesn't like doing that.
He seems to like it when he plays for France, but then again, he's got four central defenders behind him when he plays
and
for
Conte.
France. And Conte. And Matic and Fred aren't Conte. okay, so there's an issue with Pogba, but then again, Pogba's contract is expiring, so he'll be gone next summer if he doesn't extend his deal. If you go 4-2-3-1 and you play him centrally, right? That's the idea. And then you've got Sancho and Greenwood, or Sancho and Rashford when he returns. I just wonder a little bit about it, because I think it can be done, but the threat of running behind will then have to come from Sancho and Rashford.
Yeah.
Bruno Fernandes isn't going to do it either, right? And then you have an issue because they're going to have to cover a lot of ground, because they're also going to have to help the fullbacks as well. So if you're going to ask him to be so advanced all the time, that is the part which doesn't, unless your plan is just, oh, Cristiano's always the out ball, just lump the ball to him, he's big and strong, he'll control it. Yeah, but then he's going to get the crap kicked out of him.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think you need crosses in the box. And even if they're in the air, it's so good in the air that I think you need more deliveries there. You have to tell to Wan-Bissaka, said to Wan-Bissaka, come here training. Everybody trains in the morning, you train in the morning, but in the afternoon you stay behind and we're going to do crosses and crosses and crosses and crosses to improve him. Because it would be silly to have a player like Cristiano in your team, whether he plays on his own up front or with another striker, and not giving that service in the air, because he would be so dominant. Then in terms of running in behind, we saw Bruno doing it at times, sometimes when Pogba pushed the ball over the top. But they need to find a way. Sunday against Wolves, that line of four, James, Sancho, Bruno and Greenwood, they were all on the same line. No one was dropping, you know, in between the lines to get the ball. There was not enough movement. And I'm just thinking, it's not Cristiano at 36 that's going to add movement to this team. So they need to find something somewhere.
No, but that's on Solskjaer. You tell people to move and they move. Sancho's not dumb. Rashford's not dumb.
No.
Bruno Fernandes can find space, right?
He should. I just think that if there's no space, if there's no movement and nothing without Cristiano, I just don't know with Cristiano in that team, how you're going to resolve it.
Most people agree, because he's always scored a ton of goals, that, add Cristiano, put him on the pitch, you're going to get another 30 goals a year. I mean, objectively, it's going to be less than that, because you will cannibalize goals from whoever he replaces, obviously. I look at this, and for me, I ask myself, does this make United better than the other contenders? And if you were to ask me right now, I would say that City, Chelsea, and Liverpool are... If you asked me before the Cristiano deal, I would have said City, Chelsea, and Liverpool are a level above United.
Yeah.
And you add Cristiano, I'm not sure that this closes the gap.
Oh, it has to. It's still Cristiano. He will score 3 goals with 1.5 chances. He will. No, he will. He really will. I have to say, I'm a bit worried for Bruno, because Cristiano will take the penalties, you would assume.
Yeah.
I mean, he does it with Portugal when Bruno is in the team, so... And I do wonder if Bruno will have the same freedom. And we saw how well that works with Greenwood, when Greenwood drops and Bruno can take all that space in behind. I'm not sure that he will have that with Cristiano. So I have to say, I'm a bit worried.
But you're going back to the overall team thing. You think just adding Cristiano, leaving aside some of the problems he may make, because obviously he's going to bring a ton of positives too.
Yeah.
You think this puts them on a level with City, Chelsea,
you
and
have
Liverpool?
It has to be. A City with no strikers... You know, not signing Kane. I know you love Ferran Torres, and I know he's been good lately, but still. I do think that the pressure is bigger and mounting on Solskjaer to find the right formula and the right way of them playing. But Cristiano in your team, of course, it's still Cristiano. He's still the greatest goal scorer the world has ever seen, pretty much. And he's in your team, even at 36, in a league that he knows, where he's going to be the boss, in a club that he knows, with all that buzz and all the momentum that he's signing, he's bringing to the club. For me, they can go and win this title.
I think they can win it. Right now, I still have those other three teams marginally ahead of them.
Maybe. So they play Newcastle next, which could be his debut after the international break.
It's expected to be, yeah.
Then Young Boys and West Ham. I think it would be very interesting against those kind of teams where I'm not sure how much space United will get, to see how he does, how they play. But I would think that Solskjaer will need a bit of time to get it right, if he ever gets it right.
And I would assume he's going to come off the bench against Newcastle, if that is his debut, just because you'll be coming back from an international break. Obviously.
He wouldn't have had much
training time. Yeah. I want to put this out to a broader argument, which Paolo Condò, who's sort of one of the deans of Italian media, he made the argument this summer that this is the summer. We've all talked about player power and the power of superstars. He said that maybe this is the summer when the players didn't get their way. And let me just, and I've kind of gotten into this idea.
Yeah.
Because think about it, right? Lionel Messi wanted to stay at Barcelona.
Yeah.
He wasn't able to. He didn't get his way. Gigi Donnarumma wanted to stay in Milan or possibly sign for Juventus and make a ton more money.
Yeah.
He didn't get his way. He's now backing up Keylor Navas, and he's making just a smidgen more than the contract that Milan offered him.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo, like,
he got the move he wanted.
He got a move. I don't know that he got the destination he wanted or in the terms he wanted,
yeah,
right?
Maybe.
He sent all around Mendes, all around Europe, flying here and there. Last days of the transfer window, he didn't get his way.
Yeah.
Right? And the other thing, people talk about he wants to win another Champions League. Are United's chances of winning the Champions League that much higher than Juve's? I mean, if all he wanted to do was add another Champions League, then it's easy. You know, Man City gives you a much better chance, right?
Than
United. I'm an Mbappe, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to tell me he's happy in Paris, he wants to bring Mbappe,
which is true. Otherwise, he would have clashed with the club to leave.
But he didn't get the move he wanted, right? They received enormous bids and they were turned down by the club.
Yeah.
Right?
But also because he's happy to stay.
Okay. But what I'm saying is...
No, you're right. I think it's a good point.
I think it's an interesting one. And to push it out a little bit further, the idea of the superstar carrying the team, right? This idea that people have said, oh, player power. Oh, it's like the NBA now, one superstar. I'm not sure that's true. Because Manchester City nearly won the quadruple last season. They don't have a superstar. I mean, they have a ton of superstars. They don't have a megastar, right? De Bruyne is the closest you get. Guardiola is, right? It's about the collective there,
you
right?
You should add Kane to the list. Kane who wanted his
move. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry. Maybe the biggest one of all. He wanted his move. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, this only supports my argument. Chelsea win the Champions League, right?
Yeah.
There are no megastars in that team last year, right? Agreed?
Yeah.
Arguably not. I mean, Lukaku, we'll see. You go around Europe, you see more cases like this. Atletico Madrid, who's their megastar? Joao Felix, but we're not there yet, right?
Yeah.
Bayern, really, they obviously have superstars, but it's really much, much more about the collective.
Yeah.
Inter last year, you could argue their megastar was Conte.
Yeah.
And then the team with two megastars, Neymar and Mbappe, didn't actually win the league, right?
Yeah.
Yes, sorry to bring that up.
No, it's okay.
So I was just kind of wondering if there was something in there. Liverpool, before that, when they were winning everything, right? There isn't one dominant star at Liverpool, right?
That's true.
And I wonder if those two things kind of play together. The people say, all right, yeah, there's the commercial angle and everything. It's lucrative. But, you know, you pay for that. Cristiano Ronaldo was earning £930,000 a week, if you like to think in terms of pounds a week, at Juventus, right? Part of the reason it became unsustainable. He brings in a ton of revenue.
Yeah.
But you pay for the privilege.
Yeah, of course.
He knows what he's worth. George Mendes knows what he's worth. That's part of the reason he makes so much money. It's part of the reason Neymar makes so much money, right?
Exactly.
It's not just justified by the football on the pitch. So I'm wondering if we're seeing a little bit of a sea change, a bit of a shift here.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And I don't know if it's down to the pandemic as well and the fact that clubs maybe don't have as much money as before, even if we saw some big transfers. I don't know if, there's a change, or maybe there's not a big star. Yeah, maybe Haaland would be like that in 5 years' time, or Mbappe, and they would be like those poster boys that they actually want to be. But you're right, maybe collect, and maybe that's what United won't get with Cristiano. In a sense, is that now that you've brought one of the GOATs in your team, would that impact your collective strength or the collective strength that you've tried to work on in the last 18 months?
I think there's a perception of that a little bit. I think that's part of it. And I think it's also economics in the sense that there's very few clubs that can afford these superstars, right?
Yeah.
So if you know you're Man City or Paris Saint-Germain or Real Madrid or United, because really these are the only four clubs we can really talk about that would spend a ton of money, you're not really bidding against anybody. You're only bidding against these three other dudes who might already have people in place.
Yeah.
So that gives you a lot more leverage. And that's why we don't have the exact figures yet. In Italy, they're saying he's taking a 20% pay cut. I don't know if that's accurate. We'll find out. But that's also why these guys don't have the leverage that they have. Yeah. And the clubs have more of the leverage. And maybe we're getting a little more rational in the power relationship. All right, enough, Cristiano. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Because you can't have one without the other, let's talk Messi. Oh, look at that. You're wearing your FC Paris shirt. No, not Paris Saint-Germain,
Messi.
Of course. Chucking away 20 years of history. Sorry, 10 years of history? What is it? Anyway, Messi made his debut substitute in their 2-0 win over Stade Reims.
The last 25 minutes he played, 30, I think, with added time. Oh, it was so beautiful with that shirt, so handsome, so everything. It was so nice. Kylian Mbappé scored 2 goals. Don't roll your eyes. He looked really handsome. He looked...
I think the first person described Messi as handsome. Maybe not classically beautiful. He got lumps kicked out of him, though.
He got a bit. There was one or two good movements. First touch, amazing. I mean, he didn't warm up. You know, before the game, you know when the subs warm up and he didn't do that. Half time, you know when the sub come out, didn't do that. But hey, he's Leo Messi. He didn't do the warm down for the subs and the unused players after the game either. You know, it's Leo Messi.
The detail you only get on the show, you see?
I know, exactly. Messi!
All right.
Some people in Madrid might still be confident, Gab, that Kylian Mbappé is still coming over. I'm 50-50. I'm a bit lost, to be fair. I thought he was staying, then I thought he was going, then he was staying, then he was going. Now I'm not sure. But hey, 2 days to go. What do you think?
I can only assume that Real Madrid have an agreement with Kylian Mbappe, right? They've been talking to us. They've known his dad for years. I think even before he went to Monaco, right?
Yeah, when he was 11.
So all it takes is Paris Saint-Germain accepting their offer, and you can wrap this up pretty quickly. So that's why you would say never say never. However, looking at playing, scoring, those posts on social media, and the simple fact that it makes no sense whatsoever to spend 180 million or 200 million or 220 million on a guy that you can sign for nothing on January 1st makes me think that this is all a ruse. And I increasingly like my theory whereby Real Madrid make the bid knowing it's going to be turned down to simply lock it in even more in everybody's minds that he's going to Real Madrid.
That's what PSG think as well. Exactly the same.
Liverpool and Chelsea battled to a 1-1 draw at Anfield. Jules, was this a fair result? And what did you make of the penalty and red card for Reece James?
I thought it was a fair result, Gab. I thought it was a really good game to start with and up to the red card. Chelsea, who scored first, were really good. Really good away from home. Liverpool were really good. I thought their press in that first half was excellent at times. And then in the second half, it's 11 against 10. And Chelsea, again, showed the art of playing with 10 men, defending, but not... defending,
not retreating into the 6-yard
exactly,
box,
but not being under too much pressure.
It's so difficult against 10 man clubs.
It's amazing. I thought
they were really
tactical masterclass the second half. The penalty, I have to say, it might be controversial. I'm not really sure where is the debate. It's a handball, and I think he moves his arm towards the ball, and it's a red card. The debate might be why is the referee looking at one image and like a still image.
13 seconds. 13 seconds took him to do that. For me, I can see, I think it's up to the referee. I think my main issue is, and for me, I probably wouldn't have given it for the simple reason, and it's not a cataclysmic thing. Simple reason, the shot comes at you from what, 2 meters away.
Yeah.
The ball ricochets off his leg.
But you move your arm.
Onto his arm, right?
You move your arm. He moves his arm. It's pretty clear. He moves his arm. But if he doesn't move his arm, the ball hits his side and then goes in.
But you have to look at the dynamic of the situation.
No, I know.
He doesn't know where the ball is going, right? So the only way you can get it is he makes his body bigger, right? But he doesn't know where the ball is going to go when it in the split second that it comes off his thigh onto his arm. So this idea that the arm is moving, I don't know. I don't fully get that. But look, I don't have an issue with the penalty. I do have an issue that when you only look at 13 seconds, I don't know if you only look at a still frame. Look to me like as he was jogging over, he could see the whole picture. That to me makes no sense. And the referee and Graham Kavanaugh, the VAR, should have helped them out on that.
Yeah,
or he's Graham, whatever, Graham, yeah, Cameron, Trevor, yeah, wherever, Trevor, wherever the hell that Trevor, guy is.
Yeah, I agree. Sticking with Liverpool, according to The Athletic, sporting director Michael Edwards is likely to leave at the end of the season, Gab. This is a big deal.
It is a big deal. Michael Edwards is... He's an unusual guy in the sense that he was a footballer, I think at Peterborough, And then he goes and he actually studies and he gets a degree.
Yeah.
Becomes super smart.
Yeah. Maybe he was before as well.
He was presumably very before, but then he becomes super educated afterwards. In addition to being super smart. They brought him in, and, you know, at the beginning, you had the, part of the transfer committee, which Brendan Rodgers didn't like. You know, the transfer committee, they made all the bad signings, and Brendan Rodgers only made the good signings.
Exactly. That's
But he's been a big part of their success in the in their transfer dealings. And I think it's undeniable that they've been very successful in that part. So I think it is a loss. They're very high on his number two. I think his name is Julian Ward or some dude like that. It's always hard to tell from the outside because we don't get to speak to Michael Edwards. Unlike Leonardo.
I know.
Who talks to the media daily and also
is,
can we say it? He's more handsome than Michael Edwards. Leonardo's a dish, isn't he? You know, we don't know this guy, people around him and who observe him and observe his work say he is really important.
He's amazing.
So I don't think it's a punishment that his contract's not being renewed. I think maybe he's going on to other projects. Who knows?
Maybe.
Jules Koundé was left out of the Sevilla squad for their 1-1 draw to Elche. Jules, does this mean he's one step closer to Chelsea?
Well, certainly in terms of destination, because he was in Paris waiting to see what's happening, which is closer to London than Sevilla, I guess.
Well, I thought he might be in Paris because of the French national team.
Yeah, but there was a game at the weekend. Instead of being at the game, he was in Paris waiting to see what's happening. Now we're hearing that maybe the deal might be off. There's still 2 days to go. You know that Tuchel really wants him. If he's the two clubs can find an agreement. He's got release clause of €90 million, which is not what Chelsea are ready to pay. But I think they thought they had a verbal agreement before that for around 50. If Sevilla wants suddenly more money, I think that could be, that could make the deal off. So he really wants to go. Tuchel really likes him. Well, it's one of those. I think Chelsea would be a better team with him, even if they already have really good defenders. But I still think he's young and brings, can bring a lot to that team, especially with Rudiger with 1 year left, Azpilicueta, his age.
I'm not, we've talked about it. I'm not sure they have really good... I mean, their defenders are playing really, really well in the system, but they're older and whatever. I think this is a bit of Monchi mischief.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
If I'm Sevilla, I say, hey, that 90 million release clause, give us 90 million worth of players and pay some of their wages. I'm serious. Like, Chelsea have still have a gazillion players that they need to shift. A couple guys on loan to add depth, Chelsea picking up the tab, plus... you know, 50, 60 million, whatever it is, I think that gets the job done.
Definitely. First game of the post-Cristiano era at Juventus, and it was a horror show, Gab, against Empoli.
Absolutely horrible. This did not
so
look
bad.
Like... look, they only lost, you can look at it and say, oh, look, they only lost 1-0, and, you know, there might have been a penalty under Dybala, but nobody even brought that, not even the most hardened Juventino brought this out as an excuse. It was absolute chaos. And, you know, with Allegri, and it was surprising, because with Allegri's teams, even when they're bad, they're generally not chaotic and disjointed. Yeah, when they're bad, they just kind of sit back and are dull and create nothing.
Yeah.
Here, they created nothing. The midfield was terrible. Bentancur was terrible. Rabiot was terrible. McKennie playing in this weird position between the lines. That didn't work. Dybala was terrible. Nothing worked. I can just chalk this down to, I don't know. I don't think there's a causation thing, correlation with Cristiano. I think it was just simply early in the season, get to work. And it's going to help if Manuel Locatelli starts.
Yeah, of course.
And this was a horrendous performance. They said too much with Cristiano gone. Maybe the theory is that individuals tried to do too much, like they were too frenzied, too felt like they had to do anything on their own. I don't want to hear that. This is an Allegri team. I want discipline.
And even Allegri saying that it's too bad results if you count the Udinese draw. Too bad results that make us going to be better after. Well, ideally, you would have liked to start with better games and better wins.
I view this as a low watermark, and from here you go up. Those quick hits were so good, we got to do some more. Memphis Depay shines Barcelona a little bit less so, and they beat Getafe 2-1. Jules, your thoughts?
Where would they be without him, Gab? Where would they be? Because, again, it was a poor performance. I thought collectively, individually, Griezmann has zero shot. I'm not just saying shots on target.
Griezmann got booed again.
He got zero shot. I know he plays on the right-hand side, and I think they have to find a way of getting him involved a bit more, but this was not good. I don't think he was good at all. And Memphis scored a lovely goal from him, and again, showing how important he is already for this team. But basically, this team is only Memphis. This is an only Memphis team, and this is not good enough.
All right,
I'm sorry.
3 points, Ansu Fati is coming back one day. Move on.
And meanwhile, it looks like Ricky Puch is being pushed out the door. I mean, they tried. They've been trying for the last 12 months, to be fair. Are you surprised?
I am a bit surprised. I don't know why he just doesn't like him.
I don't know.
He's there. He's not costing you much money. What I am surprised is that there's been no Cakers yet. I'm assuming, if he's not in his plans, I'm assuming somebody picks him up at least on loan or maybe do a deal with a compra, as they like to do that, where they can buy him back. But he's a gifted footballer, and you can't teach technique, and he's still young.
Yeah.
Manchester City, who, by the way, I'm told to say, have extended Ruben Dias's contract to 2027. Shock.
Okay.
They beat up Arsenal 5-0. Shock again.
Yeah.
Jules, I said we wouldn't judge Arteta on this game, but rather the next two against Burnley and Norwich. This is so disjointed and horrendous. It's hard not to.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Although, again, it's a bit the same narrative as again the Chelsea game. You don't expect them to beat City, I think, especially at the Etihad. However,
I'm not expecting them to beat City.
But however, this should be better than that. You can't be 2-0 goal down after 12 minutes with the defending that they had. Arteta saying, I thought we started the game well. How? How did you start the game well when you 2-0 down after 12 minutes? And a man down after 30, and then you could easily have lost 10-0. They could have lost that game 10-0.
Hey, I'm not sure about Odegaard's position. And by the way, and what's this, Chambers, the other guy, with funny hair? Come on, Kolasinac. Come on, man. Come on. Enough.
Ferran Torres started up front and scored again. He now has 7 goals in his last 9 Premier League games. Gab, you said he would become the answer. And I know you feel vindicated in the way you're looking at me. I can tell. You happy?
I am happy. I'm happy for him. He's a very good player. I hate this pigeonholing of players. When he came from Valencia, there was no idea what position he would play. People were like, oh, he's a winger. You know, enough. He can play center forward. And you know what? Gabriel Jesus is a winger. There you go. Pep said it too. He agrees with me.
Exactly.
Robert Lewandowski grabs a hat-trick, taking his career total to 300-1 and as Bayern pound Hertha 5-0. Jules, I've run out of things to say about him, so you talk.
It's just too easy for him, isn't it? If one goal in the first game, one goal in the second, and this time two headers, right foot, easy goals.
And the dummy for the first goal.
But you know, it's just the position. I think he just has now, and maybe he doesn't even have to think about it. It's just automatic in his head where he's always in the right position at the right time. It's just scary. And meanwhile, Gab, talking about Bayern, they've picked up Marcel Sabitzer from RB Leipzig for 15 million. He only had 1 year left on his contract. This is good business.
It's really good business. I think it's potentially a game changer. It gives them leverage over Goretzka as well. Yeah. I imagine he's going to stay. They need bodies in midfield. Goretzka and Tolisso's contracts are expiring. They've extended Kimmich. They're short. You know, when I said they need major surgery, this is what I'm talking about. They need to evaluate their squad and whatever. And Sabitzer gives you that. I think it's a tremendous pickup. I'm told he only wanted to go there.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of Leipzig, they got beat at Wolfsburg 1-0. Jules, you talked about how hipster Wolfsburg are, what with Wout Weghorst up front. Mark van Bommel. But you're glad. So you must be really happy that they're top of the Bundesliga, right?
They're on top of the Bundesliga. Three games, 3 wins. I thought they played well against Leipzig. It could have easily been a draw.
I thought Leipzig deserved to whoop them.
No, I disagree. I disagree with you. And you know what? It's this Leipzig team is a bit up and down, I think. They still need a bit of consistency, certainly in terms of scoring. But yeah. Real Madrid tighten up at the back and beat Betis 1-0. Gab, were you impressed or distracted by the wait for Kylian?
So I thought Real Madrid, Florentino was, because throughout the game he's like on his phone the whole time.
Yeah, he was always. Not watching the game at all.
No.
Like, what are you doing?
This is so Carlo, right? They had the defensive horror show, so they said, all right, we're not going to concede here, whatever happens. This can't become a thing.
The Courtois had to come up with big saves.
Courtois, in the first half, in the second one, they could have gone a goal down. Juanmi, he needs to do is square the ball, and instead he just goes and gives it away. And Real Madrid come back to the other end and score. That's fine. 1-0. I thought Real Madrid in the second half really dominated them. Yeah. And I look for stuff like that more than chances. And look, the midfield will pick up further when Toni Kroos returns as well.
Yeah.
Milan beat up Cagliari 4-1, and your boy Olivier Giroud, or Oliviero, as he's now called, shines. Jules, if he keeps going like this, Zlatan may struggle to get a game.
Yeah, and they keep showing Zlatan, or certainly on the way I was watching the game, in the stands, you know, going like, after each goal, he was clapping. And you know what, more than the goals, because one is he takes it well first time, the other one is a penalty, but the flick for the Rafael Leao, which I thought was fantastic. Good, he's happy, and he even spoke a bit in Italian at the end in his interview before switching to
English. From Grenoble. He can speak any language.
Exactly. Olivier, you know how much we love you. Anyway. Spurs are top of the table in the Premier League with 3 wins in 3 games, and they haven't conceded a goal. 3-1-0 wins, Gab. You didn't start coming, did you?
I'm not conceding a goal. To me, this is unreal because, you know, Tanganga, Dyer, Davidson, Skip in front of Sanchez. Davidson Sanchez. Come on, man. Come on, what are we doing?
I know.
It's good. And look.
They moved their luck a bit.
And Nuno hasn't had time to work yet. I'm curious to see where he goes. And now they have the Kane value added as well.
Yeah.
Luis Suarez scores, but Atletico Madrid need a bizarre last-ditch own goal to avoid defeat against your boy Unai Emery in Villarreal. Jules, this was weird.
I mean, if you haven't seen it, go and check Issa Mandi, who had a really good game as well against Suarez and Atleti. He was perfect. He was playing the last, literally the last kick of the game, and he tries to, it's a long ball, Atleti hoof it, and he wants to cushion it towards his keeper, Rulli, who had gone AWOL. I don't know why Rulli even came out of his sort of his line, if you want. And then it's the worst and the most ridiculous on goal you would ever see that cost Villarreal the win as well. It was just crazy.
That said, rule of football, they played much better than they did against Elche, did. And yeah, Rulli exactly. did make a great save earlier.
Yeah, definitely. And this was back on Friday, but Inter come from behind to beat Verona 3-1 thanks to two goals from El Tucu, Joaquin Correa, who they just signed. Are you impressed by the first two games?
Look, I still have my reservations for the seasons. They did have to come behind, but Correa is a really good player. He looks sharp. Inzaghi knows him inside and out.
Of course.
And he gives them something different. And I think that's what you need right now. With him, they're going to attack in different ways.
Yeah.
With Conte, it was a little more one-dimensional. Again, this was a lifetime ago on Friday, but an injury time winner from Erling Haaland gives Dortmund the 3 points against Hoffenheim. Jules, I'm still not sure about the Marco Rosa diamond.
I'm very skeptical too, Gab, and they got lucky on that game on Friday night, big time.
Well, Hoffenheim with the equaliser in the 90th minute, and then, of course, Erling pulls it out for them.
Yeah. You still to see more. Maybe they're working a lot on it, and there's a lot of things for the players to process and to understand of what Marco Rosa wants them to do. But I agree with you. It's not just that you need to work on it. I'm not really sure that fits the player that he has, full stop. And you know,
what about Witzel at centre back? I thought there was a temporary thing, but it seems to be ongoing.
They seem to like it, yeah. And there were rumours that he could be on the move, but I think they certainly count on him for the season. But we'll have to see if they change something or not. Can't believe we're leaving so late in the show, Gab, to celebrate the special one. Tell me about Jose Mourinho's Roma and the 4-0 win, the 4-0 thumping of Salernitana on Sunday.
So what struck me about this was we all have ideas, preconceptions about Jose Mourinho's football. And I'll be the first to say it. And look, they're based on fact. They're based on what we've seen when he was at Spurs and when he was at United. So he goes to play Salernitana. It's a bit of background on Salernitana. Newly promoted, not much money. Their manager, Castori, is kind of like, he's sort of like a cross between Sean Dyche and Tyson Fury. Right? He is the ultimate man's man, hard guy, no compunction of, you know, he played like a 9-0-1 formation against them. Castori also is a guy who was banned for a whole year because years ago when he was managing Cesena, they had some playoff game either for promotion or relegation, and he just lost at the final whistle, started attacking everybody. So this is what he faced. So clearly Jose said, all right, I cannot play on the counter against these guys because they're going to do the same thing. It's just going to be a war of attrition. So he says, like, guess what? I'm going to get my good players to show what they can do. And they did. And it was beautiful. Jordan Veretout's goal, if you haven't seen it, check it out.
Goal of the weekend, I think. Definitely.
I mean, it was a beautiful team goal. Tammy Abraham, he got his first goal.
Yeah.
Played really, really well.
Like Ronaldo. Like Brazilian Ronaldo, he was.
Mkhitaryan.
Pellegrini.
Pellegrini scoring two goals. So it's a big win. It's four wins in a row for Jose Mourinho. That's if you count the conference, which I'm sure he does.
Of course, Strasbourg Sport, you know, exactly. They're a small team.
Monaco, Lille, and Olympique Lyonnais all get their first wins of the season.
Yeah.
Jules, which of these three should PSG be fearing the most?
I think it's Marseille that they should be fearing the most.
It's not one of these three.
I know. In these three, I would still say that I think Monaco, although it was a tough start of the season in a way with the Champions League qualifiers, the playoffs, all of that, but Kovac has a fantastic squad and they would get back to their best.
No respect for the defending champions?
No, but it's harder for them. And even yesterday, that win with Jonathan David's goal that probably should have been disallowed against Montpellier showed some weaknesses again. So I'm not
no
sure.
No respect for Peter Bosch?
I do. But there's always a bet with them. I do think that Monaco of those three will do the best. Ciro Immobile bags a hat-trick as Lazio destroys Spezia 6-1. Gab, is Sarri ball back? Is it there?
You can't stop Immobile. Come on, man. Luis Alberto also was phenomenal playing in that midfield three. Look, they're helped by the fact that Spezia believe, Spezia are one of those analytics-driven teams, and they believe we're better off going out there and attacking.
And play.
They're fearless. We go out there and we play. It's the opposite of Salernitana, right? And the problem is you do that against better players, sometimes you're going to get spanked, especially when you go down to 10 men. And that's pretty much what happened in this game. Your boy Thiago Motta, former PSG legend, Thiago Motta, of course, now in charge of Spezia. I think Spezia are going to be okay because I think their approach is the right one.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you try to play that way against full-on Sarri, you will get your rear end handed to you.
Yeah.
The Daily Mail are reporting that Willian is ready to cancel his contract with Arsenal, move to Corinthians in Brazil, and give up some £20 million in salary. Are you buying this, Jules?
No, but I'm applauding. I'm applauding if he does it. I have to say, too often we're saying players, they prefer taking the money and staying even if they don't play and just train and then go home and that's it. But if he's ready to do that, he knows he's not going to play with Arsenal at all. He will probably play with Corinthians, you would think. I would love him if him or someone else, you know, would do that kind of gesture, if you want, because he doesn't have to. He can stay, take the cash, and then leave in a year time.
I'm going to look at... I mean, we haven't had these numbers confirmed. Yeah. Although, funny enough, Kia Jarapsha looks after him. So I think he's a little busy now, Kia, because I think he's involved with the Mbappe deal as well.
Yes, he is indeed.
But we might, after the window closes, maybe we'll reach out to him and ask him. You know,
yes.
Because you know what? Footballers rarely take pay cuts when they don't need to.
Exactly.
And if he does do this, I mean, I know I've been hugely critical of the move from an Arsenal perspective. But hey, if he does this, more power to him.
Yeah. Despite Premier League clubs refusing to release players for the international break, players who have to go to a country on the red list, a bunch of them are still going anyway. This is Giovanni Lo Celso and Cristiano Romero from Spurs, Aston Villa, Buendia and Martinez. The two Emmys, indeed, Gab. What do you think? And we thought that by now this would be sorted with an exemption, but it's not there yet.
So I think... I still hope it will be sorted with an exemption. And I hope these guys go because I think, they signed a deal to allow this.
Yeah.
Right? And you knew the risks are coming in. If it's your government, hey, it's fine. But it's a government issue. But more power to them, more power to the clubs. I don't know what the clubs could have stopped them going, and the clubs aren't allowed to punish them when they come back. So I think they're in the right. And by the way, Romero and Lo Celso, they were on the bench. Okay? So, you know. You can't complain too much there.
That's true.
But this is, like I said, I'm not a public health expert, but look at the facts, look at the figures, look at the infection rates in different countries, and tell me why people need to stay in a quarantine hotel for 10 days when they come to the UK, when we've got the sort of infection rates that are here. I think it's a legitimate question to ask.
Yeah,
but fundamentally, the issue is Premier League signed a deal or agreed a deal, as well as also, it's not just them, it's La Liga and Serie A, these things. They signed an agreement, and they have to do it. And if you're quarantined 10 days, quarantine 10 days. You know. And then after 2024, when we redraw the match calendar, maybe we'll have different conversations. Brest's Romain Favre refused to travel with his team and missed the 3-1 defeat to Strasbourg. Jules, is this a good way to force a move and to get Milan fans excited because that's who he's being linked with? Is he any good?
He's very good. He's got a sweet left foot, Gab. He gave one of the assists of the season already against PSG in the game last weekend, or you know, the weekend before, whenever you're listening to this podcast. Fantastic, great kid. I know this doesn't look good when you refuse to.
No, it doesn't look good.
And 10 minutes before the flight was the meeting to get on the flight, he called them to say, "I'm not going to be there." I know that's not ideal, but he's really good, and I think Milan will get a really good player. I know they've got plenty in terms of creativity and that kind of stuff, but you could still do with him, I think, as well, because he's really good.
He was only at Brest for 1 year, right?
Yeah, he was at Monaco in the academy. Didn't really think he would have a chance with the first.
So he's had one breakout season.
One in this one. No, really, really, really promising kid.
One in this one that is 3 days,
yes,
three games
exactly.
old. Okay, just checking.
Exactly. But keep your mind open.
All right.
Because, trust me, he's really good. Barcelona starlet Ilaich Moriba is on the verge of leaving, and he's reportedly choosing Leipzig over Spurs. Gab, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, look, there's been some pushback here from Barcelona fans saying, oh, but, you know, we're going to more than double his salary, and they needed him this season. He was going to play and blah, blah, blah.
So he doesn't want to extend at Barcelona.
Well, he had a year left on his contract.
Yeah.
And Moriba, even though it was a big pay bump, this isn't like, you know, people saying, oh, take your lead from Gerard Piqué and Busquets. And, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know his personal family circumstance. But it's one thing for Busquets and Gerard Piqué, who, you know, are multimillionaires many times over. And, like, it's not a knock on being rich. They've earned that money because they've been outstanding for a long time. And asking an 18-year-old kid who could, you know, crush his kneecap tomorrow and never walk again to go and turn down that kind of improved offer that Leipzig are giving him.
Yeah.
So that, I think, first and foremost, you know, Barcelona aren't in a position to do that right now. Equally, if you are going to go and develop as a player, Leipzig is generally a pretty good place to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they are going to get 15, 20 million for him, I think it's money that Barcelona can use. I hope that Barcelona can find a way to put what they call a recompra in there, a buyback clause, even if it's 50, 60 million, because the reality is he's a really, really good player.
He's got big potential.
And he showed serious flashes last year.
Yeah.
Roma's Javier Pastore has turned down a whole bunch of offers, even though he doesn't fit Jose Mourinho's plans. He's got a deal through 2023. He made zero starts last season, and I guess it looks like a Gareth Bale in Madrid situation.
Yeah.
But Jules, he's a guy who, if you're into aesthetics, if you're into beautiful goals, check out his YouTube compilation.
What a player.
32 years old, but he was Paris Saint-Germain's first mega signing of the new Qatari era.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you have a soft spot for him.
Of course I do, and what a player. I've seen him so many times. I think one I put on Twitter a compilation of his nutmegs. Which was just
the nutmegs.
Just nutmegs with PSG. And so many of them. It was just amazing. Just such a talented kid. Injuries have played the part, sadly. I think maybe in terms of ambitions and being driven and all of that, work rate, not sure he's right up there. And that's why maybe he didn't have the career that his incredible talent and potential with the ball should have taken him to. But I just think he's sad. He was at Messi's presentation at the Parc des Princes. Roma didn't even know about it. He was there because he's a friend of Messi and obviously a former PSG player. So I just think, he's really sad. I don't know, he's 32 years old now. I'm not really sure what's next for his career, whether he stays now or not. Does he really want to still play football? I'm not really sure. I just find that really sad, Gab.
Do you think it could be a role for him at Paris Saint-Germain? Maybe go and come over on loan or something?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Because I'm imagining...
But he must be on huge wages, no?
Yeah, yeah. So you get Messi to give you some of those, but make up the difference. I'm just imagining training sessions with Neymar, Messi, Mbappe, and Pastore.
Oh.
I don't know, like free kick competition or something.
Oh,
and I can imagine Pastore winning more than his fair share.
They're because there's certain things out of this world.
That he can do very well.
Yeah. Borussia Dortmund are linked with a loan move for Callum Hudson-Odoi from Chelsea. Gab, is that what they need? And would Chelsea be right to let him go?
I think, given the amount of players that Chelsea have, Ziyech, I'm assuming at this stage, isn't going to move. They're still hoping, I think, to shift Barkley. But they've got so many guys there. If he's not going to get minutes on the pitch, there's no point keeping him around. In this formation that he plays at 3-4-2-1, it's narrow. It's not suited for him. The man is a winger. Now, we talked earlier how Marco Rose is also obsessed with his two front men, with Malen. Dude, Marco, come on. How about we ditch this? How about you play 4-2-3-1 the way God intended? And if you're going to bring this guy in, I'm assuming he's not bringing him in because I'm doing something crazy newfangled like, ooh, I played Haaland with Malen. Look, he's a winger like Malen is. Let me play Hudson-Odoi. I don't think it makes sense. I don't want to limit him. I do hope that he gets somewhere to play because before his injury, he was, I think, one of the most exciting English talents we've seen in a long time.
Definitely.
So if he can get that back and regain that mojo, maybe he can do it in Dortmund.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, my buddy Ettore tried to buy Cristiano Ronaldo's shirt from Manchester United's online superstore, but couldn't do so, apparently because his squad number has yet to be confirmed. I'm also not sure he's actually signed his contract yet.
No, he hasn't.
Whatever. I care about squad numbers about as much as I care about which kit looks best, which is not at all. So please fill me in.
Yeah, so I think the number would be an interesting debate because Edinson Cavani currently has the famous number 7. And he's been registered for the season with that number. And apparently the rules from the Premier League, which I didn't know, by the way, I found out yesterday, once you've been registered for the season with one number, you cannot change halfway through the season or after two games or unless you've got an exemption, which the Premier League might grant United so that Cavani can get another number and give the 7 to Cristiano. I don't know.
Apparently they've never given an exemption before, apparently.
So there might not be an exemption, so he might have to settle with 26 27, 20, I don't know then where you go.
77, I think, would be cool.
77 could be okay.
I mean, the Premier League aren't going to be stupid. Like, it's not like France. Like, no, you can't have a number above 30, and 30 is only for goalkeepers, unless you're Messi, of course.
I think it's good to have a rule. But I don't know. And by the way, that blue shirt that they wore against Wolves, you know, that a bit retro from the past, you're not a fan, are you?
No.
You're not a fan.
I don't understand. You're Manchester United. You just wear red. Wear red, and then if you're second kit, wear white. I don't see why you need to muck around.
But that's the third kit. There's third kits as well. Now you can have different colors.
Yeah. There's a seventh, fourth, and fifth kit too.
So Ettore will have to wait a little bit longer. In case you missed it as well, Mario Balotelli, who is now in Turkey at Adana Demirspor, and he's making headline again, Gab, because he had a little friendly incident with his mate.
Yeah, it's his third game. He's got the equally level-headed Yunus Bahanda,
yes,
also playing for...
And Stambouli, I think Stambouli is...
Yeah, but at least Johnny's normal. The other two...
Yeah.
Anyway, he gets substituted. He's so angry. There's a video of this. I'm sure you've probably seen it. It's out there. And he's just shouting, talking to himself, and he's angry. And at one point, you know, he goes and he sort of like shoves his teammate in the head, which of course, you know, I pick up the English media like, "Man, mad Mario punches teammate on the bench after something." Come on, he's not punching him.
No.
Come on, man, just grow a pair. Yeah. Come on, man. Right, that brings us to an end. But I'm going to be back on Thursday. You won't be, but that's okay. That's all right. It's okay.
You had like 3 months off on holidays.
You
so
are
I can
allowed.
Take a few more
you
days.
Are allowed a day off. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.